Our guest on this episode of the podcast is Issa Sika. When you think of like the current like Nigerian like music renaissance, I think one of the people you have to kind of bear in mind is Issa, who has played a very significant role overseeing the careers of some of the like most significant proponents of Afrobeats. You look at someone like Issa, who just turned 30 this year, and he's basically put 10 years plus in the game, which is something not a lot of people his age can claim or boast of. And also, I mean, I just think it's very important that we kind of, you know, hear someone like Issa's story, because I think there's the inspiring part of it, and there's also like the idea of like, you know, knowing your purpose and just working to fulfill it and basically finding success at it. I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Good evening, my name is Maiwa, and you're welcome to another episode of the Made in Nigeria podcast. With me today, we've got the youngest in charge. Oh, well, he used to be known as the youngest in charge. His name is Issa Sika. Hey, what's up, Issa?
What's up, man? How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're recording this in Plug HQ. There are a couple of people here in the background, so Squad. Just excuse them. Okay, so my customers. Okay, let's talk. What was the first career ambition you had?
I wanted to be an anthropologist.
Really?
Yep.
You don't want to be a footballer?
Nah, I like football. I never wanted to be a footballer.
Okay. So why didn't you become an anthropologist?
My dad told me that I'd be poor in Nigeria for an anthropologist, so I freed it.
Okay. So like when people are growing up, young people, like they tend to make things up on the fly. It's like,
yeah,
sometimes you don't know what you're doing.
Standard.
So it's rare that people know immediately what they want to be. Like, did you always envision yourself in this space you're in now?
Nope. Like I said, I wanted to be an anthropologist. I used to be in there. I didn't care about, like, I tell people all the time, I was even saying to someone yesterday, I didn't even know like Storm Records existed for ages. But my friends that told me, oh, you know, your uncle owns this really popping label in Nigeria. I had no idea. I had no interest in Nigerian music or anything.
Okay. So when I was growing up, you were the guy in the Afro who was always wearing Storm t-shirts at parties.
Yeah.
So what was the nature of that relationship? How did it come about?
When I was in secondary school, there was this group of artists in our school, White Sands, called the Bonafide Crew. So they were like the local champions and everything. So they were trying to get a deal with Storm. So they came to me and spoke to me about it, and I was like, okay, I'll talk to my uncle. At this point in time, my uncle's relationship was typical uncle, nephew, hi uncle. Never had spoken to him about business. So went to meet him, had a conversation with him, and then I guess from there, everything picked up. Because like, that's around the same time when I started throwing parties. You know, in secondary school, I have the parties at the clubs or like the house parties. So it all like was intertwined. Like obviously with entertainment, like a big element of it is like with parties. That's what I was doing at that point in time. And at the same time, that's when like Nito moved back. Bluetooth.
Continue.
Yeah. That's around the same time my cousin Nito moved back to start his music career. So I guess what it was that me throwing parties for like the young people at that point in time was like an avenue for us to like promote music.
Okay.
So everybody knew like, oh, Issa was having a party, Nito C is gonna come, or Soski is gonna come. So we pretty much use that as like our gateway to the youth at that point in time. And that's how I got stuck in it and haven't found an escape route yet.
Okay, so you were a key part of NATO's breakout?
To an extent.
Well, okay.
I didn't really have the hands then, I was learning.
Yeah, but I think
for
me, because it's like, it's one of those things where
you wouldn't probably notice if you didn't know me. And like,
yeah, like it's like, yeah, you basically like, it gave him credibility, for lack of a better word. So how did that come about? How did you, like, what was it about Nito that made you care for him?
You know, when you're young, you're just excited, you're like, oh, it's so cool, I have access to, like, these guys, and these guys are the cool guys, and all that stuff. So, like, I'll just make sure, like, all the parties we had, like, they play Nito songs, and then it was pretty generic, man. I just made sure the songs were played at like all our parties and events, and I think Lizzo came to like two or three of the parties, my first party when I was younger. So I guess that helped with breaking him into that market. And then obviously he had like mainstream success, so it all worked hand in hand.
Okay, so from what you said so far, yeah, it sounds like having connections, networking, yeah, like, yeah, played a role in, definitely, making you. So talk like about the importance of like networking.
I tell people all the time, relationships are the most important thing. We were talking about something in the office today about some guy who was ranting about some issues in the music industry, and I was like,
the article.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I was saying like how I feel as if the angle at which he goes about he went about stuff back then is very not the best way, because at the end of the day, like, yeah, we do have all these issues where like, oh, a certain person wants to get paid to play your songs or and stuff like that. Like, for me, like, so today, I know there are loads of rumors that go around saying, oh, when did we do blog, we're giving out like laptops for free and TVs, but someone should come and tell me I gave them a laptop or a TV. Like, I actually gave one person money before they blog, and it was 50k, and it was more a thing of like, oh, thank you for helping us. Not that the person said to me, I won't play your video if you don't give me. So I guess like relationships do play part in all these things, because at the end of the day, if you do have a relationship with somebody, it removes opportunity or the instance of someone saying, you know what, I'm not going to play your music if you don't give me this. And it's one thing I preach to everybody at the office. I'm like, guys, build a relationship with this guy. Don't let it be that anytime you need something, you're calling him. Like, we do multiple things here. So it's kind of thing where, like, if we're not calling the person, talk to the person about playing Maya Kun's next single or Parisi's next single or David's song, we're inviting them to a DJ OB gig, or we're giving them free tickets to the major Lizzo show. Like, that's how you build a relationship, and that's the way, that's the, because as a business, it's not sustainable to pay for every record you're promoting.
Okay. So, you opted not to get a degree.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Multiple reasons. Like, I had nothing against like people going to uni and getting, and everybody around me has a degree. I'm a special case. My siblings went to uni, my cousins went to uni. My uncle and my dad still hold it against me that I could have gone to uni and finished uni. But for me, I feel as if like at that point in time, there was a part of me not being serious and being like, yeah, I don't care about this uni thing. But I look at it now and say like, stuff wouldn't be this way, or I wouldn't be where I was today if I'd gone to England for 4 years. I definitely wouldn't be in that scenario. Wouldn't be in this scenario. And at the end of the day, like, some of the most successful people don't have like a degree. Doesn't define.
Yeah, I think in your own case, Seth,
yeah,
basically made you grow up while, yeah, your friends were still playing. Like,
yeah,
you were responsible for yourself.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And yeah, and like, I mean, like, I still have the same friends I've had for years, but I do not have like a lot of older friends. So I guess based off of that, I grew up faster. Yeah, I mean, everybody has a different path. I guess uni wasn't for me. It's not like I'm not going to tell my kids not to go to uni. Like, it's their choice.
Okay, so in hindsight now, yeah, looking at Storm,
yeah,
I think it's something we didn't realize at the time, but that was one of the golden ages for like Nigerian music.
Definitely.
How did you feel to be part of it at that time?
I felt like a bad guy there now. You know, when you're younger, it's like, oh my God. So we walk into the club, you know, with some 16, 17 year old girls, and then the band is dabbing you up on it, the suit's passing you above Rosé. That time, obviously, at that time, things were important. Things are important to us now. So like, for me, it was like, oh God. Oh, I remember like, hi, when I wanted to go out sometimes, I wouldn't be allowed, and then like Bizzle would come and pick me up and I'll sneak out. Like, Bizzle has been taking me. Bizzle was the one who used to sneak me out. So like, everyone would be going out, and then it was one of those nights that, oh, no young guys. Bizzle would sneak me out. Or like, what was that? Bola.
Mm.
For example, like Bola or Insomnia. Like, it was fun. Like, at that point in time, for me, it was more, above anything, it was fun. And I was learning at the same time. I tell people all the time, like, I feel as if I would not be where I was today if I did not get that experience. Like, I saw things work, I saw things fail. I was like, okay, this doesn't work, this works. So like, I think experience is the best teacher. And based off of being involved in that, I learned a lot from talent management to putting together events, or even just about like managing relationships. Like, cause like this industry is built around like, if you look at it, the most successful people have amazing relationships. Like, money can only take you, money and potential can only take you to a certain extent. Like, working smart and maintaining relationships will take you way further.
Okay, so another thing, in hindsight, looking at Storm, it served like as incubator to a lot of like the people running the scene now.
Definitely.
So there's you, there's Tola Odunsi, yeah. There's Bizzo, even Tinya interned there, yeah. At a point. So what do you think it was about the whole movie Asika built that made it the go-to place for a generation of like aspiring young music execs?
I think like multiple things, like actually Nokobi convinced people to move back to Nigeria. Example, Bizzo. I've seen situations where, like, for example, if you think about at that point in the music industry, there were a few successful guys. But if you think about it, loads of the guys who were actually pioneers of this era moved back to Nigeria. LD, Banky, Nato, Ikechukwu, Source Kid. There's at least 10 artists that moved back. And one thing I also learned from that whole, like, one of the reasons why I think Storm was that way is like, there was never this thing of like, oh, he's not signed to Storm, free this guy. It was more about like, we have a common goal, just trying to push the culture and make this work. And I think, what's that saying about when you're good stuff happens, like it's genuine stuff.
It's not a mistake.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah. And that's one thing like I learned first hand, I try to do all the time, like, I was having a conversation with someone yesterday, who thought I hated her. Like, she had spent like the last 3-4 years of her life thinking that I hated her. And randomly one day, I see her and I'm like, oh, hello. And we started talking and she was like, oh.
So you hate me?
Yeah, so like, I thought you had an issue with me and I was like, what do you mean? So I sat down and spoke and, well, cool. And it's kind of a thing where I feel as if like, with all these things, like it all adds up, the kind of energy you give, your intentions, and I feel as like with Storm, the intention was always good. It was always okay. In 10 years, where are we going to be? In 5 years, what are we going to be? This guy has the potential to do this. This guy has the potential to do this. Like, loads of, like, Tola's doing movies now. Like, everyone is doing different. People, everybody has grown. It's no longer a thing of let's throw parties and concerts and push music. Everybody's doing more than that.
Okay. So let's look at Davido.
Yeah.
How did you meet David and why did you decide to manage him the first time?
You know Lagos, we had a very mutual friend. So like David and I both knew of each other. We were cool with each other. Hello. And then we had spoken a few times about the whole music thing. I knew he wanted to do music. At that point in time, this is still where me, I'm not sure what I want to do. I do know I want to be involved in the entertainment industry. I don't know how. So David comes back to Nigeria one Christmas, we hang out, we talk, and then David had this really bad habit of just going ghost. I think we hung out like twice that Christmas, we've spoken and David disappears. Like 6 months down the line, David calls me, I'm coming back to Nigeria, I'm ready to start my music career. This was in 2010. So officially start work 2011, organized back when, I mean, at that point in time, like, both of us didn't know. We were just going with the flow. Our parents were not cool with the idea of the whole abandoning school to do music, the lifestyle that came with it. So it was pretty much wake up, do this today, sleep, go, okay, the song pops tomorrow, we keep it. There wasn't a plan. It was, let's see if this thing is going to work. If it doesn't work, life goes on. So it wasn't necessarily a thing of me saying like, why did I choose to do it? We just wanted to try something and it worked out, thankfully.
Okay, so like, so obviously when you guys, all that was happening, you didn't feel like, it wasn't the type of thing, you know, like when people are like, oh, we knew we were going to blow. Like,
no.
You were just,
I mean, I knew like, we were, because the thing is, at that point in time, I don't think anybody was hungrier than us in the sense that we had points to prove to a million people and we wanted to blow. And we knew we had good music, we knew we had the potential to be big. But no, like, I would never sit to you and say, come sit down and lie to you and say that we'll be where we are today. Like, the time till today, David and I still pinch ourselves and be like, wow. Like, we woke up this morning, Falls the most Shazam song in New York. Like, if somebody told me that 5 years ago, I would have been like, bro, leave me alone. Why? Like, let's be real.
What were the biggest challenges of that journey, and like, how do you think, how crucial were those experiences, whatever they were, in shaping you?
Biggest challenge is definitely convincing Davis that we could actually like survive off of doing this. That was definitely the biggest challenge. There were lots of other challenges, but that was like the major one. And there were loads of experiences. Like I tell people all the time, I think one of the best things that happened to us was that we had that 2 years of madness where we were just two young boys having the time of their lives, getting, doing what they wanted to do, not thinking about tomorrow. Because now, some people want to do certain things, and me and David are just like, I'm not interested, done it already, doesn't make any sense. And it's helped like shape a lot of stuff, like how like we both run our businesses. Like, I don't feel as if like we'd be able to run the Plug or DMW if we hadn't gotten all of that stuff out at an early age.
A lot of people don't know about the Black Diamond thing.
Yeah.
How did you guys get out of that?
Me and David are bad guys.
Okay, so, and how did you guys manage
to clarify? Black Diamond, no one closed level or anything.
Do you want to go into it?
Nah, I mean, like, they've spoken about interviews before. Like, we signed it when we didn't have support. We signed a deal with some with the label, but then we got out of it last minute before it actually like properly kicked off. There's nothing really else to say about it.
Okay. And then how did you guys manage your relationship when you decided to go in separate ways?
You know Lagos, man, like, I don't think, like, they don't have a million mutual friends. Like, it's not as if, like, we didn't see each other. I still brought deals to the table. I still booked David for gigs. So, it was still, like, obviously, our relationship wasn't the same in the beginning, but over time, like, it was kind of thing where, like, I was like, yo, I have this money for you, like, let's be grown men about it. And then, as you think, one of the things I talk about all the time, the reason why David and I get along so much is, like, we think the same way. In the sense that, like, there's so many times where, like, I'll tell somebody I need to talk to David about something, and I'm just saying that to buy time. I already know what he's going to say. I already know how he's going to react. Stuff like that. So it's not... I feel like the best thing that happened to David and I was just 3 years apart. Because it allowed us to mature, grow, understand ourselves, analyze the mistakes we made, and pretty much perfect this whole thing that we have now.
Okay, so, in the years apart, yeah. You set up Stargaze.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that chapter.
So that's when I actually registered my first actual company. So we did a few things. We managed the talent for like the Channel Awards for like 2014 and 2015, I believe. We managed Budge for a year. Had a good run with Budge. Won Heady for Best Alternative. Worked with Black Magic for a while. He won the Heady for Best Alternative before that. So like we won that award like 2 years in a row. Black Magic had quite a good run at that point. That was like the Repertoire Rainbow run. We moved IJ back to Nigeria for a while, Power Your Number, which later went on to do amazing numbers. What else did we work with the band for a bit? What else did we do? Things here and there.
Okay, so the IJ one, yeah. Like, because I think there was a point maybe a couple of years ago where IJ was probably the most like, he could demand one of the highest fees as a Nigerian artist, like outside Nigeria in America.
Yeah, I mean, he had a popping song in the States.
Yeah, so how did you get him to move back to Nigeria, and how do you feel to kickstart his career in this market?
The funny thing is, so we didn't even know for ages. We went to the same primary school. It was near above me in Corona. So I moved to Lagos grade 4. And then I moved to, I was in Corona for two or three years, and it was a complete culture shock for me. So I was actually one of the guys that used to bully me in my first year. We didn't clock it for ages. So he reached out to me, told me what he wanted to do, told me he wanted to come to Nigeria. He had just signed a record deal with One Nation at that point in time. So I didn't really need to convince him. Like, he knew. What he wanted, you know what he wanted to do, just didn't know how he wanted to do it.
So you brought the how?
To an extent, but I feel as if like with Ayo's music was a little bit ahead of its time. Like even now, the way he works makes more sense for him, in the sense that it's more like operating outside back in. You know, in Nigeria, like,
it follows what happens. Yes. Yeah.
And they also, as talent, they put you in a box. Like, you have to make a certain kind of music. You have to, there are certain things you have to do, which doesn't work for every artist. So, yeah, I mean, he just put an amazing EP called Lazy Genius that I've been playing a lot. So, happy for him.
Okay, so we're a Plug HQ.
Yeah.
So, for anyone who doesn't know what Plug, what the Plug do, what do you guys do?
We offer a lot of services in the entertainment industry, like, so our most popular for talent management, but then we have our own events, we produce events, we put our own events together, sub-publish music, distribute music, marketing, mostly music related. We're trying to branch out, but mostly stuff that has to do with music and the live area of things. So, like, we're involved in a lot of events. The Native Land Festival, I think that's like in a, when like third or fourth year now.
Third year.
David's concert last year, we put a lot of that together. We're doing that again this year. Marcon's concerts this year, so Abuja, Ibadan, we're doing Lagos in December. DJ Obi, we have three signature DJ Obi events in Christmas. We have our mainland block party that's huge now. what else do we do? We just finished, we're working with major labels on pushing their music in Africa. So we distribute and promote the music for them in a few regions here, so like Nigeria, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Senegal. They were just in Lagos for a show. What else have we been up to? Numerous stuff. Not everything comes to mind at this point in time, but we dabble a lot in the entertainment industry. Pays the bills.
Okay, so how did you and Bizzle become friends?
Storm, like, literally, I met Bizzle as a staff at Storm, and then he was just the guy I got along with the most, and we've just been friends ever since. Like, we've argued, we've done everything together, man, everything.
And what was it about him that made him a good choice to start your business with?
So, with Bizzle, I talk about the time, like, with Plug, yeah, you have two people that are completely different, so it balances everything else. In some instances, like, with certain things, like, it came to me something, I'd be like, talk to Bizzle. And some people know, like, so, like, for example, like, when we have, like, situations where someone has to be super cutthroat, everybody knows that's me. You need the next guy, you talk to Bizzle. And it works for us. And it's like what I was saying about David, like, I don't need to speak to him about everything, I know what he's going to say. And he's probably telling you the same thing. Like, it's not one of those kind of things where, like, we need to speak every day. Like, we share a common goal and know how we want to do it. Like, we know how we want our brand to be identified. And it's worked, so far, 2 years now, it's worked for us.
When David came back the second time,
yeah,
how did he let you know he wanted to do it again? And what made you say yes?
See, yeah, with me and David, there's no, we know our way. Like, it was the kind of thing where, like, we low-key knew we were going to do it again. We just then decided when. It was literally like, we had one phone call conversation. He was in my house an hour later. It wasn't I want to do this. I was like, let's do this. I said, okay, I'm down on these conditions. Let's just air everything out. And like, as grown men do, did that, and we've been good.
Okay, you know, this wasn't on my list, but yeah. I just remember it now. Because at the time, he had kind of, that was when, was Son of Mercy, or was
it? Son of Mercy EP.
Yeah, that was when that EP came out, and he didn't do very well.
Yeah.
So, like, in what space was he in? Like, was he...
So, one thing I do know is that he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy at all because of the way, like, he was being represented, how he was being pushed. Because, like, nobody in Sony can come to us today and say they have anything to do with the success of the music that has been created in the last 2 years. Son of Mercy was a misrepresentation of who David is. Like, you won't leave David in a studio for 2 weeks and leave him in the venue by himself. It was more of them trying to fit him in a box. And it's kind of thing where he did it and it didn't work. So he was like, yo, I'm going back to the drawing board. I'm going to do this how.
Back to basics.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we call it, back to basics. I pretty much do things the way I know how to do them. And I've seen it work on numerous occasions. So it was the kind of thing that there was no... In the last year, I never really had... Like, I go to day, like, maybe every other day after work, I pull up at David's house, hang out with him for an hour, talk, chop it up, say this. There's no... I don't question him with the music. He doesn't question me with strategies. We've never really had... I think in the history of our relationship, music-wise, I've said two things. Change the second verse on Fire and Damage Erase the song. Those are the only two things I've ever... We had Damage Erase for ages and we started on this. And I was like, this is a song. We had so many songs. And then with Fire, I just said change the second verse because the original second verse was a little controversial. Apart from that, never really, like, do you do me, I'll do, you do you, I'll do me, we'll come together and...
Okay. Looking back last year, last year was something else.
2017?
It was
amazing.
Monster year. You guys had... And when I say you guys, I'm not even just talking about David, I'm talking my uncle too. So like, you guys had probably four of the biggest Nigerian songs in Nigeria last year.
We had like, David had...
If for
Fire.
Like that.
Some people argue so unconscious, but I know it's up there. Michael had Mama and Cheche. We had Ada, Iku. We had
Ali. But that was this year though.
Was that in Christmas?
I think
Christmas. Yeah. So yeah, at least we had like 5-6 big songs last year.
Was that that's you guys' most successful year in business?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so it was Mayaku's breakout year, it was Davido's monster year, and then the last couple of months, things almost went to shit.
Yeah.
So Olu, Chime, Tagbo, Fire came out of that, and then how testing was that for you guys? Especially you as the manager, because
I mean it was deep, but like it taught me a lot, because like one thing I do know for a fact, and I say it all the time, and I'm sure I might even have spoken about it, it showed us that like not everybody who you think is a person is actually your person. Like when all that stuff happened, like I know who stuck around, I know who didn't stick around, I know the people who tried to make it bigger than it was. Like we say all the time, we're like, thank God I had CCTV as a showroom. Like that was like the first step out of it. Like if we did not have that CCTV footage, you never know till today. Like cause like people were literally waiting for us to slip up. Yeah, learned quite a lot from it. Like it was a really trying time because obviously like for me, Olu in particular, that was my little bro. What else? We found out about Olu literally just before going on stage in South Africa, so it was really hard. And then it was just the combination of everything happening at so like close to each other.
How do you guys overcome it?
We just kept pushing, literally, continue doing what people knew we could do, like put out music. And that's it, like every day, like kill them with success, like just continue what we're not gonna allow people to like destroy an amazing year for us. So we like literally when everything was going on, I remember David and I talking about it, like, yo, we need to drop a song now. I remember like the label trying to hold on putting out Fire, and I was like, guys, this song doesn't come out now. The whole essence of the record is, the whole purpose of this record is defeated. We were literally on the phone with 5 people in Sony between the SA office, the London office, saying, guys, this song has to come out on Friday. Spoke to Clarence, was like, Clarence, we need to shoot this video, we need final cuts in 3 days. And we put that together in a week. And yeah, we thank God it was successful.
And how did concert feel? Like, so this is like, you've had this monster year, then adversity comes, and then...
Presenting the award on stage was a big deal.
like we had won it before, but like this year obviously was completely different. So definitely biggest milestone is definitely being able to be part of the people who contributed to moving this music thing. And then like for me, like personally, just like in general, like growing up and being able to like run my own business and be able to look back and say, yeah, these are all my people, this is what we've done. This guy was at point A 6 months ago and now he's at point D. Like there's progress. Like for me, that's my thing. I don't know, like 20 years from now, I'll be able to look back and say, yeah, when I met this guy, he was here. We did this together. We did this guy. And look at him today. Like being able to like look back and say, yeah, I contributed this, I did this.
Okay, so that's, I mean, that links to the next question about your legacy. So I just want one final question. If you could recommend other people for me to talk to, like who do you think has like an interesting story, or who do you think has done something of impact that I should be speaking to next? So maybe one or two people.
Obviously my partner Bizzle. Who else do I feel as if? Do you want the person to be like a my scene or a talent or doesn't matter?
And it doesn't matter.
As Parisi. Reason being is like people are just trying. The people are just people are just starting to like hear his story. People don't know like people don't know how many huge songs Parisi has written for other people. Like I cannot overemphasize that how amazing Parisi's pen game is. Like. Some of them are out, some are out, yeah, but I think he's probably one of the best songwriters Nigeria's ever had. Like, I get emails from A-list artists and major labels trying to get Parisi at writer's camps every day. So definitely, if I choose you, I'd say Bizzle and Parisi. I'd say Sam, Michael's manager, but Sam doesn't do interviews.
Fair enough, thank you.
As a grown guy.
Alright, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. A new episode will be available next week. To get the podcast first, kindly subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. This podcast is part of the Culture Custodian Podcast Network.